Welcome back to our CMDA Matters program, a weekly podcast of the Christian Medical and Dental Associations. I'm your host, Dr. Mike Chupp, and this week, my introduction will be brief to give us more time with my guests, two women physicians who are very serious about Christ-centered, compassionate care and about overcoming barriers to care even in the midst of a pandemic. Both of these women are seasoned veterans in outpatient care. And we will be discussing how they have leveraged telemedicine, not only this year in the midst of a COVID-19 pandemic, but in Dr. Julie Stewart's case, she has practiced telehealth for nearly a decade and has a great deal of practical wisdom to share with us. Let's listen in on my recent conversation with Dr. Julie Stewart and Dr. Amy Givler. I have not just one, but two guests today on CMDA Matters. And my first guest is Dr. Julie Stewart, a board-certified physician in both internal medicine and pediatrics. She currently serves as a physician for the Addictions Treatment Service at Community Health Center of Southeast Kansas, as well as providing primary care to CHC patients suffering from multiple chronic medical diseases, including diabetes, heart disease, HIV/AIDS, and chronic hepatitis C infection. She grew up outside Kansas City, Kansas, and got her medical degree from the University of Kansas School of Medicine. She completed her combined internal medicine and pediatrics residency at the University of Kentucky. She returned to University of Kansas and graduated with her master's in public health with a focus in health policy and management. She currently practices in Arma, Kansas, which is a little town of 1,400 people, and she services, believe it or not, a 5,000 square mile region using telemedicine with CHC, the Community Health Center of Southeast Kansas. My other guest is Dr. Amy Givler, who has been very involved in CMDA, especially in our WPC, Women Physician in Christ Commission, over the years. She's from Monroe, Louisiana. She's also a recent addition to our Board of Trustees. Amy graduated from Wellesley College and Georgetown University School of Medicine and completed her family medicine residency at Ochsner LSU Hospital in Monroe, which is an indigent care hospital where she now works as a clinical assistant professor of family medicine and comprehensive care. She also works at an urgent care clinic and is a volunteer doctor for SHIP trips to Western Kenya. She is a prolific writer. She writes for our Point blog on a frequent basis for CMDA, and she's also written a book entitled Hope in the Face of Cancer, A Survival Guide for the Journey You Did Not Choose. Amy, tell us a little bit about how you have been integrating telehealth, telemedicine into your practice. It wasn't there before the pandemic, as I understand.
It was not. And so that was early March. You know, our hospital, I work in two different places, and both places just shut down. And it took about a month, because I work in an indigent care hospital, and for the telehealth to slowly emerge as something that we could set up our patients to see. And there were actually a few in-person visits during the month of March. So I'll never forget my first visit, which was a very needy patient who I've seen for a decade, and I see her frequently, and she has a very difficult home situation. I was really worried about her. And actually, I had talked to her on the phone, but as soon as a telemedicine was available, she signed right up for it. And I said, this is our first one. When we finally got the half hour of preparation, figured out how to, you know, finally connect to her because of Wi-Fi connections, and, you know, the nurse has to walk people through the process. When she saw my face, she just burst into tears. And I thought, okay, this is good. I am very glad we're connecting in this way. And we just talked about her, what's going on at home and whatever. So I thought that's good. I'm glad we're doing this. And for the next, I'd say 2 months, it was almost, you know, probably 50 visits. Most of my visits were telemedicine. But then starting in early June, we went back to in-person visits primarily, unless a patient really insisted on it, on a telemedicine. And I think I've only had two since then. And I'm happy to see it in my rearview mirror. And I'm hope that I will not primarily be doing telemedicine. And I know Dr. Stewart has a different perspective. So I'm a good foil for her. Mm-hmm. And there are reasons that I think it's not ideal.
Dr. Stewart, you've been involved in telemedicine for a while. Tell us this year, 2020, how telemedicine is a part of your practice.
Our organization has been doing telehealth for about 10 years, beginning with our behavioral health program. And then I had been doing it already, seeking it out for about five. Mm-hmm. I practice for an organization that covers a 5,000 square mile radius across Southeast Kansas and Northern Oklahoma. And so it was more of the same and also an expansion into different modalities. So typically we had been using the platform BC, which is a secure HIPAA compliant connection. Mm. I learned about Doximity. And so I use Doximity from my phone. Our organization, we use eClinical Works, so we started using the eVisit platform from our electronic health record. And then where certain patients weren't able to use different connections, because of the pandemic, different regulations were changed to allow, particularly in the behavioral health realm and addiction realm that I practice, to allow non-HIPAA compliant connections. So we've even used some FaceTimes. Our organization kind of helped us create dummy accounts so that we weren't giving out our personal information, mm-hmm. but we would use that and use FaceTime for patients that would recognize the fact that it was
as a temporary measure, Julie, that this is just during the pandemic.
That was just during the pandemic because we were trying to get as many patients seen, much like Dr. Gibler. We knew that certain patients couldn't go too far without us, particularly in the addiction medicine world. We also were doing some phone visits. Those are my least favorite because you can't see a patient. There's so much to be seen with a picture being worth a thousand words. Mm-hmm. But we eventually scaled back on phone visits. We scaled back on the non-HIPAA compliant, but certainly our ECW visits, our e-visits from our electronic health record, BC is a mainstay for us and Doximity are mainstays for us.
What have you come to discover to be the strength, certainly being able to take care of patients who are very far away, as you've alluded to in Kansas, but what have been some of the other maybe surprising strengths over time with doing telehealth, telemedicine?
It just really allows me to get more patients. It reduces a barrier to care. And so, you know, I do hepatitis C treatment. And I'm actually the only person treating hepatitis C in southeastern Kansas and northeastern Oklahoma for patients that are uninsured. So absolutely, we've been able to really fight that epidemic in our area because of telemedicine. It's certainly not the warmth of being able to reach out and put a hand on a patient or pray with a patient, but the fact that they can get to me in times of crisis has been great. And I think as patients get more used to the platform and kind of what the nuances are, they have become increasingly comfortable over the years. And I've actually had some people that have wanted me by virtue of me being an internist to be their primary care physician. And then they'll just see one of our mid-level practitioners, maybe who is in their local town, to kind of do physical exams and guide their care in between visits with me. And so allowing for partnership and care has really expanded my ability to be available to multiple patients as well.
Dr. Gibler, since this is the first year, it sounds like that you've used telemedicine. Have you been surprised by some positive things? And then what have really been the most frustrating things that you've experienced this past spring and summer?
Like Dr. Stewart, we have a huge catchment area for our hospital and my clinic. So 8 parishes. I'm here in Louisiana, so we call them parishes, not counties. So the distance, people don't have to travel. You know, that's great. But the bad thing about that is a lot of people don't have Wi-Fi connections, poor cell phone connections. And so the technical glitches that happened and continue to happen with trying to do that kind of remote care is overwhelming for a lot of our patients. It makes it impossible, unfortunately. I would say seeing people's home environment, which Dr. Stewart totally hinted at, has been very eye-opening. You know, you see people's pets, their spouses, their kids, you know, sort of what their house looks like. But then again, the bad part of that is a lot of people decided that they were going to make the call or, you know, do the video visit while they were driving or shopping or taking a walk or something like that. Mm-hmm. And if they were driving, I said, I'm not talking any one more word until you pull over. I'm just not going to do that. I think they need to be in a place where they can learn too. You know, what am I trying to achieve with this visit is for them to also, you know, get something out of it. And I think if they're taking a walk, they're distracted by something else. So they need to focus too. Not having vital signs. You know, I'm a family physician, so I'm taking care of all sorts of things. And there's a reason we call them vital signs, blood pressure and pulse.
Yes.
You know, I can say, well, what was your home blood pressure cuff reading last? But I'm not sure how much I trust those, frankly. So now that I'm pretty much doing in-person visits again, it's so reassuring to know that I have the person in front of me. And there's just that ability to make a personal connection is so much easier in person. And being able to do a physical exam, like Dr. Stewart said, you know, somebody has to be listening to this person's heart and lungs somewhere. And that's me. You know, I want to really get a sense of what their medical care is like.
What are your triage criteria now, especially Dr. Stewart? You've been doing this for a number of years, for saying, okay, this is the kind of visit that certainly fits within a telemedicine realm. This is not the kind of visit, or even after you start the visit, this can't carry on. Talk to us about how you make that decision.
I have a nurse in each site. So we have about 14 different sites in our organization. And the nurse for that site knows kind of what our criteria is. If she has a question about it, then they'll call me and ask me. But typically, we can do chronic care management. So we can do hepatitis C treatment. We can do HIV treatment, medication-assisted treatment for addictions. Most chronic illnesses in terms of diabetes management and insulins and blood sugars and that kind of thing. I get a little more nervous when someone has congestive heart failure and may or may not be in an exacerbation. Same thing for COPD. Though I'm willing to see them, and at least there again, if I can look and see they're able to talk with me on a telemedicine visit and everything's going okay, then I'm maybe less worried. One thing I need to back up and add is my favorite way to do telemedicine is to have a patient come to the nearest clinic. And so I may have a patient that lives 100 miles from me, but they drive 20 miles to our Southwestern clinic. They do get the vital signs. They do get the history and the benefit of having a nurse. That patient's in that clinic. I'm in my office here. That is a real help to me because I've got the nurse that I've been working with for years and whose clinical judgment I can trust. But I have called EMS during a visit before because things just didn't look right and the patient didn't look right and the nurse got the EKG and I wasn't happy with that. And so I've given report from a telemedicine visit to, you know, our emergency colleagues. You can think you're getting into one thing and it go a completely different direction, but largely we've been very successful. The number one thing that I've had to teach staff is we can't do rashes over telehealth because, you know, they're turning around and turning circles and pulling up their clothes. And I'm like, okay, let's talk about how long you've had it. Let's talk about whether or not family, you know, autoimmune disorders are there, but I'm going to have to look at your psoriasis in person.
So that brings up, they
did have to come.
That brings up a question that's been on my mind. So are you doing any physical exam, either one of you via telemedicine, or is it strictly just a conversation with data gathering and consultation and advice?
Well, I think it's very hard. You know, I mean, you can do, there's some, depending on how much of the person you can see, you know, you can see body language, and if they're short of breath, you know, obviously, I think it's very difficult. I actually have had people, you know, show their rashes, and it's like, but as long as it's not in an embarrassing spot, I don't really want to do that. But it's just to get a sense of it. You know, I feel like it's not nearly like touching it yourself and really examining it.
We have the software to use a stethoscope and to listen. I've not got a lot of experience with that because I do with Amy feel like it's kind of fraught with complications. So it's typically more looking at globally how the patient's doing, what their thought process is, whether or not there's compliance with medication. So it's way more focused on history than on physical exam.
Well, let's look ahead. And God willing, in the future, this pandemic is going to wind down and we're going to come to a new steady state, whatever that looks like. What role for each of your practices do you think telemedicine is going to take minus COVID-19?
I am eager to expand telehealth in our organization. I've been a huge proponent of it. I testified before our House of Representatives in our state for the expansion of telemedicine and parity in terms of payers. So yes, it's very much here to stay. I think that our younger generation is much more amenable to it than our older generation in terms of what I found. It's been great for people, you know, that are particularly trying to get their lives out of the opioid crisis and really embrace a life of sobriety and progress in their recovery. They can be at work, say they've got an appointment, be out, you know, for 20 minutes with me and go right back to work, as opposed to taking a day off and getting a point and then potentially losing a job that they didn't have a lot of availability in terms of the workforce anyways. So I think there's a lot of really great things that we're going to see come of telemedicine. But I would also say that there are times when being out to reach out and hold the hand of a patient and bow our heads together and just pray for them, I haven't found that steady state yet.
Amy, what do you think, the future?
For me personally, since I am the older generation that Dr. Stewart's talking about, I'm 62, but it goes both ways. The older generation, me, with my, you know, technology is always, you know, when our kids were just like a whizzes. They still are whizzes with technology. And for me, everything is like, okay, I'm going to make this work. You know, it's very hard. But it's also my patients, my older patients. That's a huge barrier that I think they are seldom able to overcome without a lot of handholding and walking it through with a lot of nurse time for my clinics to set up the visit prior to the visit happening. It just doesn't seem like, even though I was doing it pretty steadily for what, 2.5 months there, that it ever got better. You know, even with the same person, it was just like this huge amount of time it took to set up the visit. But as people who have grown up with technology become more and more the users of telehealth, it's going to smooth it out and make it. And there's a certain subsegment of patients or an in-between visit of patients. A lot of times, especially the first time I see a patient, I want to get the blood work, you know, and I examine them, but I don't want to just call them up with the results of the blood work. I want to see them face to face. So a lot of times I set up a face-to-face meeting, but that wasn't really 100% necessary, but it needed more than a phone call. So I think, you know, that there, I think I could see telehealth working in following up more detail than what you can do with a phone call.
Julie, over the years, have you seen that you've gained a lot of efficiency that makes it so that you're like, I am so glad I have an afternoon of televisits coming?
Oh, sure. Thursdays are my favorite. because they're my majority of telehealth day. I try to be pretty flexible, so I'll have telehealth visits sprinkled in among my other patients. I would say I tend to run more on time. I don't get as gabby in a telehealth visit as I do in clinic. And so it can be a little bit difficult because my telehealth patients are used to me running on time. And then if they're sprinkled in the middle of a clinic day, I'm going to run a little bit more behind. So, but I absolutely look forward to telehealth visits. Again, because we've been doing this for so long, we have a much more well-oiled system mm-hmm. than we did in the past. We have a schedule for our telehealth rooms in each clinic to make sure that I'm not double booked with a behavioral health appointment, you know, and that's for the patients that are coming into the outlying clinics and then connecting with me. For patients that I use Doximity, I use my phone, I send a video chat link to them and they call me back usually within 2 to 3 minutes. So I think patients kind of come to know what the expectations are and they can kind of, after a few visits, decide, yes, I really like this or no, I don't. And I've got one family I think is a great example where I've been seeing her for several years because of just some really complicated mental health issues with a history of bipolar disorder. Now we're looking at some dementia issues. And on top of that, she's got pretty brittle diabetes and some heart issues. And so it was interesting. We had a conversation about we need to look at her going into an independent living situation or assisted living. Her living at home with all of this going on is not safe. And the next call I got was that she had been in the emergency room for symptoms of what appeared to be a stroke and different episodes there. So there was a question of, you know, do we need to have an in-person provider versus Dr. Stewart? And what does that look like? And so for every family, for every patient, that is going to be a different answer. And, you know, certainly for Dr. Gibler's cohort of patients, as she's been their physician for so many years, they're going to have developed a different relationship than the younger generation, you know, that we see in their 20s and 30s, you know, fending off their opiate addiction. They're much more amenable to telemedicine. But I've got some that do telemedicine visits every other visit where they want to see me in person on one day and they want to see me in telehealth on another. Mm-hmm. But absolutely, on the whole, I look forward to telehealth. It hasn't always been that way.
Yeah.
And we've had to really work as an organization to get there.
Well, I'm sure that both of you will agree that the great physician use the power of touch on a regular basis, so maybe almost every interaction that he had. And my own experience just a year ago, new family physician that I took on here in Bristol, and I just will never forget the interaction because he's the first time, I've had many wonderful Christian doctors, first time that he rolled right up to me in his chair, grabbed my hands and said, "Mike, do you mind if I pray for the CEO of CMDA after we've just had this interaction, my annual physical exam?" And it was a powerful experience for me as on the receiving end. So we obviously lose something in this interaction, but are there any ways that you make up for that, either one of you in this, and do spiritual ministry still in this setting of telemedicine? Amy?
Well, I was going to say, before I answer that, to say that what you just said about your personal interaction, that is something that I feel like touch is such an important part of the doctor-patient relationship. And until COVID, I wanted the patient right next to me. And often I'm touching their arm and making that connection, that personal connection with them, with physical touch, because we are physical human beings. We are made of flesh. But now I'm double masked and they're masked and they're 6 feet apart in the room with my inpatient visits. And so the only time I'm touching them is during the physical exam. And I try to be very deliberate when I'm listening to their heart and lungs to touch with my other hand on their shoulder. And I often feel them sort of melt when I do that. And I think the reason is because a lot of people are living alone and they're lonely, or they're not seeing, you know, the larger family, or they're they have difficult home situations, and I don't think people are getting touched nearly as much as they were before, and they need to be. So I want to be part of the solution for them. Yeah, and I can see now that I've had a little tiny taste of telemedicine, you know, a few months, if somebody really wanted to do that, I could do it, especially I do a lot of psychiatric care in the midst of my family practice, and I can see several people, but so far my patients just don't seem to be have the technology. They all seem to be very happy to go back to in-person visits and me calling them when they need to have in-between visits. But I'm open.
Julie, talk to us about accommodating for this now loss of physical presence, but still wanting to demonstrate compassion in the way that Christ did with these patients.
I certainly agree with Amy in terms of not having the touch and how powerful that is. And I too have struggled with what that looks like. One thing for me, I saw a young man who's in recovery, and we had done a urine drug test on him and found some alcohol. And so that was cause for concern. And instead of waiting for him to get off work and my schedule to match his, I was able to just visit with him over telehealth yesterday and say, "Hey man, what's going on? I saw this. I just want to touch base with you." And we're able to address the issue and to, you know, the philosophy is still the same. Whether I was sitting in a room with him or whether I was addressing it over telehealth, the philosophy is, "Hey, I saw this on your urine. I just want to have a conversation about it. I want to make sure you're okay because I care about you. You've come a long way." And so that, I think the immediacy with which we were able to deal with what we found and show that compassion and, you know, "You're not in trouble. I just want to know, do we need to support you in a different way to help you maintain your sobriety?" I think the immediacy of being able to take care of him as opposed to making him wait and maybe get a little bit deeper down a rabbit hole, I would like to think compensated for the lack of actual physical touch that I could have had in the room. And so there's a time for all things, right? I mean, that's what Ecclesiastes teaches. And, you know, and I feel like Jesus in his ministry was constantly looking for new ways to reach out to people and to touch to people that hadn't necessarily been done before by other previous religious teachers. And so from that perspective, I'm constantly looking, how can I reach out to someone else, whether it's through a different modality or if it's different phraseology in a conversation, how can I reach that person? And that's what I'm using telehealth for. So is it hard to not use touch because that's what I'm comfortable with? Absolutely. But if it pushes me into the deeper waters of faith and deeper waters of how can I reach this person, that's a good place for me to be as a Christian physician too.
Good, good. Well, I want to thank both of you for joining me today on the CMDA Matters on a topic that I think we're going to be talking about more and more as time passes, no matter what happens with COVID-19. Well, may the Lord bless you, and may the Lord keep you, and may his face shine upon you and give you peace, both of you. God bless you both.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Well, I hope you learned some practical tips from these two women physicians on how to make telehealth work. There continue to be big changes in how we do healthcare with each wave of new technology. We have adapted to electronic medical records, and for many of you this year, telemedicine. The future of healthcare, I think it's going to look very different from our past, and in many ways, likely giving patients more control over and responsibility for their own care. There's a book, "The Patient Will See You Now. The Future of Medicine is in Your Hands." It's an excellent book by author Eric Topol that explores some of these changes. Healthcare can be difficult to navigate for patients and their families, especially if they have no in-house advocate to explain the complexities of our U.S. healthcare system. The book entitled Lost and Found, A Consumer's Guide to Healthcare, is by Peter Anderson, MD, and Paul Grundy, MD, And this book makes it easy for your patients to understand our system. It's a great resource to recommend to your patients and their family members. You know, you can access both of these books, along with many other resources for Christians in healthcare, at cmda.org/store, or you can call 888-230-2637, and one of our CMDA staff will be happy to get one or more of these resources shipped to you right away. This week on CMDA Matters, I want you to hear a quick and insightful update about being a good steward of the resources that God has entrusted to us, because stewardship that honors God matters too. So just keep listening.
Welcome to another edition of Stewardship Matters. I'm your host, Jamie Campbell, Chief Operating Officer here at CMDA. I'm joined again today by Paul Montgomery, our Director of Stewardship and Legacy Giving. Paul, what's on the agenda for today?
Well, first, Jamie, thanks for letting me be here with you today. By now, all of us are getting pretty exhausted as we have watched how the pandemic has changed our lives. Every aspect of our lives has been touched, and we long for the days of not just yesteryear, but of just last year.
Amen to that. I know it's been challenging, and there's been lots of changes going on here at CMDA. Give us a little insight into what you're hearing and seeing from some of our members.
Our members, like most people, have learned to pivot from the ways we used to call normal to what we are doing today. For an example, many are attending drive-in churches and going back to drive-in theaters. One area that is impactful to us in stewardship and to nonprofits in general is donations. And this is what I will spend some time talking to you about today.
And what words of wisdom do you have for our listeners today regarding donations, both cash and non-cash donations?
Jamie, since March, we have seen a great deal of movement in the financial markets. And I understand that most 401ks have returned to their pre-pandemic levels. In fact, some may have improved their positions, to which I say, to God be the glory.
Amen to that. I share the same sentiments, and I hope the trend continues. We certainly trust the Lord for that. I understand stewardship is planning another webinar, Paul.
Yes, we are working with Ron Blue and National Christian Foundation to have a discussion on donor advised funds. Jamie, we are targeting October 15th for this webinar. This webinar is a sequel to the one we had in earlier this year. As a result of that webinar, there were a considerable amount of interest about donor advised funds, and we believe this will be another successful learning session. There will be discussion around strategic giving. There will be include donor advised funds that can be in the form of cash, real estate, insurance, donating a portion of one's business, and even oil, gas, or mineral rights. Also, we will discuss the CARES Act, which allows donors to deduct up to 100% in a cash contribution of the AGI, which only applies to 2020. And next year, we will return to the 60% maximum deduction. Maybe this is the year to set up a donor advised fund, or a year to have special giving.
That's a great thought, Paul, and being able to deduct that 100% is pretty amazing. And it's really hard for me to believe we're even talking about getting to the end of 2020. Finally. It sounds like a good variety of topics and a great opportunity for our members to do some self-education regarding giving and stewardship.
Yes, and to put the professionals in front of our members as well, as we can all navigate to the next new normal.
Paul, how can our members get additional information or sign up for the webinar?
They can always call us toll-free, 888-230-2637, or send a message to stewardship@cmda.org, and we will be sending more information out to our members this coming week.
Thank you, Paul.
Thank you, Jamie.
Thank you. Well, before you go today, there are two events that I'd like to tell you about, and both can be found listed on our webpage, cmda.org/events. One of those events is being hosted by our CMDA Richmond, Virginia chapter and is a virtual bioethics conference on the Imago Dei, made in the image of God, where the focus will be on living out Imago Dei in today's healthcare environment. The conference is being held on Saturday, October 17th from 8:30 a.m. to 12 noon Eastern Time. Conference topics will include that of abortion, even up to the day of delivery, gender dysphoria, physician-assisted suicide, political activism for the Christian, right of conscience, and marijuana use, and others. Be sure to register by October 16th at cmdarichmond.org/bioethics. Another very important conference for our CMDA dental students is an annual conference that's gone virtual this year. The 2020 Emerging Leaders in Dentistry Conference is coming up on October 31st via Zoom from 9 a.m. to 12 p.m. Eastern Time. And you can read all about it and register right there on our cmda.org/events page. Our CMDA National Convention in 2021 at Ridgecrest Conference Center in North Carolina is only 6 months away. It's April 29th to May 2nd, and a highlight every year is our Vignettes, Initiatives, Innovations, and Education, or VIE, poster session. You can find information on how to get involved at cmda.org/VIE. We've got scholarships for students who would like to attend the convention, and those details can be found at cmda.org/studentlife/Peterson, one of the last names of those who have provided these scholarships for students. If you're listening online, all those resources and events will be linked with this CMDA podcast program. As I close, I want to thank you for listening to this episode of CMDA Matters. I sincerely hope that you gain some helpful insight on how to use telehealth wisely to overcome barriers to care. I believe giving your patients critical access to Christ-centered, compassionate care, well, it matters to you. And what matters to you matters to CMDA, and CMDA matters. Be blessed, and as Moses prayed in Psalm 90 verse 17, may the Lord our God show you his approval and make your efforts successful. Yes, make your efforts successful. We'll see you next week, God willing.
This podcast has been a production of the Christian Medical and Dental Associations. The opinions expressed by guests on this podcast are not necessarily endorsed by the Christian Medical and Dental Associations. CMDA is a nonpartisan organization that does not endorse political parties or candidates for public office. The views expressed on this podcast reflect judgments regarding principles and values held by CMDA and its members and are not intended to imply endorsement of any political party or candidate.